is Davin's Den. Is Davin's
Den. All right, we are back. Joe is in studio. Hello, Joe.
Hello.
Glad you made it here safely.
Well, yeah, but getting home is another story.
Sleep over if you want. And Pip is here, and our guest,
yes,
John Consoli. Hello, John.
Hey now. Hey, Davin. How's it going, buddy?
Good, man. Good to hear from you. Now, John is a comedian and a Marine, but he's also had another life. And in this other life, he had some dealings with the Trump Organization. Now, he did sign a non-disclosure. I don't think it's the same type that Stormy Daniels had to sign.
I hope it's not the same reason.
No, I hope not.
Wasn't that kind of business?
That's what you say now.
Well, either way, you get screwed. But anyway, thank you. I'll be here all the week. So, you know, that's very common in the Trump world, non-disclosures.
Right.
So, what type of work were you doing with the Trump Organization?
So, when I got out of the Marine Corps in 1982, before any of you guys were born, probably, I went to work for an electrical supply company on Long Island, where I still live. And by 1986, one of the guys I met there and myself left and started our own electrical supply company. So we provided mostly wire and cable, electrical wire and cabling, for electrical contractors that did work for the Trump Organization from 1986 through 1991. Probably did five projects with them. The one that I can talk about is the infamous Trump Taj Mahal.
Oh,
that
one, that's a pretty famous one. That one did not end well for the workers of the Taj Mahal.
It did not end well for the suppliers and contractors of the Taj Mahal. And as a matter of fact, the last count after I was done with my lawsuit that I was involved in, there were 3,500 lawsuits filed that had to do with that property.
Wow.
So now you were supplying wiring to them?
We were supplying wiring cabling to the electrical contractors that were on the project. And so, listen, I don't want to get into any opinions or feelings or really about Trump, because the divisiveness is just – it's non-productive. So everything that I have to share with you guys is factual,
mm-hmm,
and irrefutable and documented. And there's some of the details that I can't speak about, but I can tell you that Trump's modus operandi for dealing in real estate in New York, and the reason he was able to come in, a great example is the Woolman Rink, right? He did a great job of showmanship, and the Woolman Rink brought in on time and under budget. The reason that his projects were under budget, and the reason that Trump was able to outbid his competition, is he knew walking in the door he was never going to pay anybody. It was like the movie Goodfellas.
Wow.
So now, but if he develops this reputation, I mean, wouldn't after like several years people go, we're just not going to do business with this guy?
Yeah, you know what? It was an interesting thing, Devin. You would think so, but Trump's partners, if you were part of, you know, if you were in that rarefied air, that top 0.1%, Trump always made money. His partners always made money. And even when he went through his bankruptcies and likes to brag about the fact that he was billions of dollars in debt, his organizations were in debt. And even when he personally guaranteed money, he always turned a profit, and he made money for the people who were on his board. He made money for CEOs, for presidents. It was always the working man that got screwed.
But right, but what did the other contractors?
The time I was involved in New York is that if you wanted to work on big projects, there really wasn't any way around it.
Right, but what I'm saying is, like, after a couple of years, this guy develops a reputation of screwing over the little guy. I mean, at some point, don't contractors just go, we're not going to do work for you? You know what? Well, we'd rather starve than do the work and not get paid for it, if that's his reputation.
Yeah, you know what? You'd think so, Davin, but what he was masterful at, and I think is still masterful at, is we're going to make it up to you next time. And it was always a story, and I was involved in this four times where, hey, listen, you got to take a hit now, but we have another project on the horizon. We're going to make it up to you. And I'll tell you one thing, that everybody in the organization that I dealt with, because I was only in one meeting that Mr. Trump actually was present in the room, I never spoke to him directly, but I was in one meeting where he was there. Everybody in his organization on the board were just master salesmen, and it was always truly the art of the deal was being able to play that shell game where, hey, listen, you're going to have to take a hit this time. We're going to get you, you know, 25 cents on the dollar, 50 cents on the dollar. We're going to leave you room to make it up next time. And if you don't play with us now, you're not going to have a chance to make it back. So do you want to walk or do you want to roll the dice?
That's typical with scammers. I mean, we've dealt with that on our show with these recovery scams where they say, well, let's say, just give us a little bit for this fee. That way we could get you the big payoff down the line, and it's never ending. You're constantly – not that he was getting money from you, but he was getting services from you. You're in it to get that whole big payoff so you could get made whole again.
Yeah, and it's – I mean, look at even another thing that's documented. Look at Deutsche Bank, right?
Yep.
Deutsche Bank kept lending him money hoping he was going to turn things around because there were – in so far with him, they couldn't afford to cut ties. Something else, documented fact, 1990, the Trump Organization, the number was someplace around $800 million in junk bonds, 14% junk bonds had been issued against that property, and they needed to turn like $1.3 or $1.5 million a day in profit just to service the interest on the debt. It was impossible.
So let's play devil's advocate here. Was the work, to your knowledge, done on time, done to the specifications that were expected?
No, and it never is. Talk to anybody who lives in a Trump property. Trump, in his own book, The Art of the Deal, which I've read everything that's been written about him, or you know anything that's out there, because I have a perverse fascination with it, I guess. He admits and actually brags that in order to get money, when he was running out of money for the Taj, he actually hired a construction company to move dirt around in the hole to make it look like something was happening.
Seriously? Wow.
No doubt, it's in the book.
But what I'm saying is like say like these people install the wiring. Like you're supplying the wiring to these contractors. Did the contractors, like say Mr. Trump says you have to have it done by September 30th, 1990, did they meet that deadline?
So that's a great – the contractors that I worked for would tell me that whatever deadline they hit or whatever level of service they provided, even if it was a contractual SLA, which is an acronym for service level agreements, that the Trump Organization would always find something wrong with the job and go, shoddy workmanship, you're not getting paid. Job was late, you're not getting paid. And then there was also constantly verbal agreements that would be made on the job. Hey, don't worry about that, look the other way, not a big deal. Nobody cares if that stuff has a UL label on it. We the inspectors come in, we got a deal, you know, wink, wink, we own the inspector, don't worry about it. So... A lot of shady stuff went on.
So they're telling you to cut corners. And what are these, like, as far as safety is concerned?
Yeah, you know what? I don't think that there was a concern for safety at all. Now, I was never a contractor and never was, you know, on the job site doing any manual labor. I was a supplier. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you that, even with regard to the specifications and quality of things, like one of the products that my company provided was something called Local Law 5 Class E fire alarm cable. This is the cable that, you know, fire alarm cable. So what does it do? It's the fire alarm cable. And in New York and New Jersey, the code is the fire marshal and especially the AHJ, the authority having jurisdiction in Atlantic City, requires that cable be Teflon insulated so that it doesn't propagate smoke and flame. And I can tell you that we knew this, but purchase orders would come in for PVC cable, which is combustible, and it was installed in the building.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
So there was death traps to save money.
Yeah, no doubt. And the price difference there, right? So if you had a spool of 18-gauge Teflon cable, it comes in 1,000-foot spools. The Teflon cable at that time could be $400 to $500 a spool.
Mm-hmm.
The PVC equivalent. Now, the Teflon doesn't burn. The PVC does and emits a toxic smoke. The PVC cable would be like $175 a spool compared to $400 to $500. So, yeah.
And
cutting corners and risking lives.
And the contractors are like, oh, well, I guess this is what the boss man wants, so they got to do it, right?
It's on the bill of materials. This is what we got told to order. And as a supplier, you know.
And now, according to you, because the all the inspectors, but from there are saying that they've paid off all the inspectors, they're not going to get reported for that.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I have no proof of that, and I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is that as part of due diligence, as a just from industrial knowledge and knowledge of our product, we knew where stuff was shipping, and we would say, hey, listen, this stuff's going to Atlantic City. It should be Teflon. And we got told, don't worry about that. Ship what's on the purchase order.
Wow.
So it's time for these vendors to collect their money. And Trump says, oh, we'll get you on the next one. We'll get you on the next one. So he strings them on for a little while. Eventually, get you on the next one runs out. So what do the vendors do then?
Bankruptcy. You bust the place. So here's the thing, right? I'm a supply house selling to a contractor. First of all, the standard terms for any electrical supply house in our area is 30 days, right? We extend 30 days credit to the contractor. If it was a Trump deal, they tell you right out of the block, we need 60 days.
Oh, wow.
So you had to agree to 60 days right up front. So now you're extending terms. And then what would happen is kind of like a Ponzi scheme, right? So my people, 60 days come, the bill is due. Our accounts receivable person would call the contractor and say, hey, listen, invoice number 1234, you owe us $13,000. And they'd go, yeah, well, we can't pay you yet. We haven't got paid from the GC, which was a Trump company. So they string you out there, and what it would ultimately have to be, you'd have to hold product hostage and go, hey, listen, unless you pay us, you know, we need at least half the money or we can't ship the stuff that's in our warehouse that you want. So they pay you half and you ship, and it just goes on and on and on and on until a point, to, you know, long answer to your short question, the companies that I was involved in and the reason that I wound up in court were all for bankruptcies. So ultimately, it gets to the point where the supply house is forced to go bankrupt because the Trump organization either defaults or tries to short pay. The contractor folds, and then you wind up, you know, a supplier like me winds up in bankruptcy court. I can't give you exact figures that my company settled for, but it's not uncommon for in bankruptcy court with the type of business we're in to feel fortunate to walk away with 10 cents on the dollar.
Now,
they owe you $1,000, you're getting 100.
Were other companies that you were routinely doing business doing these same tactics, or was this unique to Trump properties?
It wasn't unique, but nothing to this degree. At the time, you know, it wasn't uncommon for people to exceed their terms or to late pay or think, but I personally was never involved in any other projects that bankrupted multi-million dollar companies outside of what was going on with Trump.
Now,
it wasn't just ties either.
Now, Trump does have a reputation in the New York, New Jersey area. I know people who know people, including, I believe, one of my father's clients, who this happened to. So John's story isn't unique. So was the strategy, in your opinion, that where people would sue them and then Trump, because he had the deepest pockets, would just outlast you until you had to settle for, as you said, like a dime on the dollar?
You know what, Davin? The thing that makes me scratch my head and have a I have to – obviously I'm no Trump fan, and it has nothing to do with the White House or president. The dislike goes back long before, right? But I have to tell you this. I have a grudging respect and admiration for the man's ability – to spin stuff. And I do believe his famous quote, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and get away with it. He can. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, I agree. You know,
it's unbelievable. It's unprecedented, unparalleled.
Hey, John, I got a question for you. How would you handle your markups on product? Because you're on the electrical end. I was on the plumbing end, supplying to Trump Taj. And what we would do is we would go in at 120-day pay, but we'd go in at a 40% markup. So we kind of padded all of our sell pricing just to deal with all that stuff. Did you guys do that, or are you running a little tighter than that?
Yeah, John. No, we did the same exact thing.
Right.
And that's what made the whole thing work, because Trump on the front end, the contractors that got his work didn't have to be low bidder, and they didn't squeeze suppliers like me. So yeah, we were doing
the same thing as us. Yeah,
case 50% margin.
Right.
in our product, and probably in plumbing too, because I know guys who are in that business.
Yeah.
If you're going to go 60, 90, or 120 days, if you don't have 40 points on it, you can't stay in business.
Exactly. Exactly. And we did no less than a 35, and that was being generous because we knew we were at 120-day pay. We got paid. You know, it was dragging feet, but our margin, we paid our margin for that.
So, Joe, even your company knew because with the Trump, with dealing with the Trump-tage, you had to mark it up more than you would.
But
he already had the reputation. So there was already the reputation before you guys got to the Taj that you were going to have to do this.
Because sometimes you want to get, you know, you get in, you get the opportunity to go in there, but you know going in, anytime you go in, you know what's going in, you pay your markup, and you know you're going to be at $120, you know, $120.
And Trump don't care that he's paying more because he knows he's going to stick it to you in the backside.
Yeah, by the time the dust settles, if we're walking away with a 30 markup, okay, you know, we're going into 40.
Right, but you know
35.
You're not going to get it on the backside. You're going to get that initial payment,
right,
but you're not going to collect at the end.
Yeah. By the time we get paid, you know, 120 could go longer, but at least we know, you know, we were going in because we knew our markups were that high.
And, Joe, was that fairly unique to the Taj and Trump, or was that a lot of your clients?
That was kind of unique to the Taj. You know, okay. Certain ways you do business is you go in, and this is the business model to deal with these guys. Do you want the business or not? Well, if we can go and we work, you know, we're going to go in at a 40%. We walk away with, you know, 30, 20. That's what we're factoring in.
Now, Joe, did your company ever have to sue, or
no,
they just walked away?
No, we got paid.
You got paid everything?
Yeah.
You got lucky.
Yeah.
You must have, your bosses must have known some tough guys that Trump didn't want to mess with.
No, no, they were just desperate for shit, and we said, we're not getting until you paid his invoice.
So, you know, you hear about this a lot where people who have deep pockets, you know, companies, individuals in Trump's case, where they're like, I dare you to sue me.
Yeah.
And you hear that a lot where people get bankrupt. How many businesses were bankrupted that you know of due to your dealings with them, John?
That I dealt with, four electrical contractors bankrupt, out of business, Chapter 7, not even restructure it, boom, gone.
And how many people, and like how many people did those businesses employ?
They were relatively small shops, so I'm going to say on average, each one of these places had between, 50 or 100 mechanics in the field. So you're talking about between, you know, 400 to 500 licensed electricians, and then the office staff and management behind them.
That's not insignificant. That's not a small amount of people.
Yeah, that's a lot of people to, you know, screw over.
Well, he just did it to how many government workers, right?
Right.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because, you know, his appeal to the people who are fans of him, and I am not. But his appeal to one of the appeals is that he is for the working man. And I would always harken back to stories like yours, although this is the first time I'm hearing your particular story, John. I would always harken back like, well, how can it be for the working man when this guy's got a reputation out of screwing the working man? So what do you make of that?
What I make of that is that I really don't think he understands the concept of the working man. Mm. You know, what's really crazy is that there were times, like, I've heard and seen, not live, but seen on, you know, documentaries that I've watched, he would show up at a project and guys would stop and put down their hammers and applaud. They love this guy, right? So from afar, and the perception of, you know, the American dream and the selling the sizzle, I've never seen anything like it. But when he talks about, hey, I'm for you, I'm for the working man, nobody can point out to me a time, and I've read a lot about the life and times of Donald Trump. He's never worked. He doesn't relate to what that is, to have a job and to have to live paycheck to paycheck. This is a guy who has always lived an extravagant life and never had to worry about where his next dollar's coming from. And I think that's, until you've done it and lived that way, I don't think you really understand what it is.
But now, then here we go on the up. But we have Joe, who's in a similar field to you, who is a working man, and he believes 100% in Trump. So how do you explain that, Joe?
I explain the result. It's results driven. The economy's doing well.
No,
okay.
Before that, before he was president.
Oh, because
before the results, when he was just selling himself.
Because he demonstrates an entrepreneurial spirit that every boss I've ever had since I was 16 years old, and that's what I was raised around. That was my business experience. I've worked maybe not even really a big not a big company before, but I was always raised with entrepreneurial guys with entrepreneurial ideas, and that's what I went, you know, and that's what my business, you know, my business history has always been.
Do you think he cares about the working man?
To an extent, yes.
To the extent?
To the extent, maybe as a president, basically he did what he did because Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi was not coming to the table. You're trying to do it. It's like, if you're not coming to the table, I'm not opening the government. We have to get a dialogue, okay? And essentially, that's how you
negotiate
that.
But Chuck and Nancy are not the working man.
All he had to do was start negotiations. They refused to. They're not negotiating. They don't want to talk about it because they simply don't like Trump. What people are glossing over the fact is Nancy Pelosi and Schumer don't care about the working people either. Okay, they could have came and they could have started negotiations and gotten the ball rolling. Okay, so it's been very one-sided with Trump that, you know, it's not like they came and negotiated and Trump, you know.
I don't want to get into all the negotiations. We've been that before. I don't want to take up John's time with that.
But essentially, it's a lot of it's got to go to Schumer and Pelosi as well.
So my point is, John, you see there are working people that have bought into it. So what's your takeaway from something like that?
So, you know what? Everybody has a right to believe what they want to believe. And I've got my own beliefs. Joe has his. I know Joe, like Joe, respect Joe. He's an intelligent guy. And you know what? By and large, what really baffles me is I have a lot of friends that are intelligent, hardworking people that are pro-Trump. And that they have that right to that opinion. The thing that I haven't seen – and the thing that really shows compassion for the working man is to do what I did as a partner in a business and my partners did, is that we made sure when money came in that our people got paid and we did without. That's sacrifice. And I believe in capitalism. I believe in the American way, but I believe in something called compassionate capitalism. There's a book called Compassionate Capitalism that was written by a guy named Rich DeVos. Now, Rich DeVos, and yes, of that DeVos family, Betsy DeVos's father-in-law,
right,
started the Amway Corporation. And I have no love for Amway, but this book talks about the responsibility. If you're going to be a capitalist and an entrepreneur and successful, we have an innate responsibility to take care of those by our own free will, not by socialist dictates. To take care of those who are less fortunate. And I think we all know many people who do that. I can tell you that I've seen no evidence that Donald Trump has that compassion.
Well, I could break it down to the comedy level, which we're all fielded. We've all had the gig where we did the venue and the venue stiffed the booker. The good bookers will still pay the comics what they were supposed to get for doing the show. The bad bookers will string you along. I'll get it when I get it, or you never get it. So that's how you can. That's how you make it real simple. You know, I try to be more of the good booker type. That's why when I'm ever at a gig, I always got cash in my hand. I haven't gotten paid
yet. I do the same thing. The two things I book a year, everybody gets paid. You know, and it's like that. You know, me getting paid is not your problem.
Right. You know? So even you. You run your very, very small opportunities and businesses ethically, where you're going to take care of the people who you've made a commitment to.
Mm-hmm.
But the guy who you like a lot does not. And I can never reconcile that. That's why I can never take Trump seriously, because I can never reconcile what he did to people like John, because I knew those stories. To me, when I was evaluating everything, that was a red flag. Oh, you know what? If he's going to do this there, I don't think he's ever going to look out for the little guy. And you can bring in other politicians, this, that, the other thing. But I was asked to evaluate Donald Trump as a candidate. And for me, I just couldn't get past that because of stories like John's. You heard how many people, you know, some of these people probably never got back on their feet.
I know horror stories, Davin, of people not only not getting on their back on their feet, but people losing their houses, people losing their families. One in particular sad story of a guy who killed himself.
Oh, wow.
Who took his own life. And now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the guy committed suicide because of Donald Trump. It was circumstances, and who knows what else was going on with that individual.
Sure.
But a lot of horror stories, and it's just it's hard for me to get beyond not just what happened to me personally and to people I know and love and respect and care for, But the other things, you know, Devin, you ask, how did he get away with it? How did he get away with Trump University? Scam. Trump steaks. Scam. Trump wines. Scam. Trump water bottles. There are none. They peeled the labels off. It says Deer Park underneath.
Trump Foundation.
Scam after scam after scam after scam.
The Trump Foundation. He's not allowed to be on the member, a board member of a charity for the next 10 years because of the Trump Foundation. No, I'm with you on that. Listen, you and I, you know, I don't know how we align politically, but as far as evaluating Donald Trump, you and I see you and I are copacetic with that.
Yeah, man, and you know what? That, I don't know how much time I have left, but one thing that I really want to get out there, Davin, is that I'm not sure. I think I know that I'm not quite as liberal as you, and but that really doesn't matter. What does matter to me is that the binary flavor, especially what goes on in social media, right? If I put on, and for me on social media, most of the time I'm just going for the joke, right? It's some hacky joke that I'd never put on stage, and it comes into my mind, and that's my outlet for it.
Mm-hmm.
But some of it's true, and it definitely represents things I believe. I'll put up something anti-Trump, and all of a sudden, it swings back, and I get 8 guys that jump on and go, you love Obama, or lock her up, or Hillary Clinton, as though if I don't like Trump, the only option I have is I automatically love Obama and Clinton, and that's not true.
Well, that's the default. That's the default of the Trump supporter. Turn the attention away from the guy you're talking about. That's why I say, go, it has nothing to do with Hillary. Let's just focus about what we're talking about. Like, put it on Facebook. We could have a whole other thread about Hillary, you know, if you want to have that thread about Hillary. But right now we're talking about President Trump, and a lot of his supporters, they're unwilling to have that conversation, or they're unable to, because I think politics, and especially with President Trump, a lot of it's emotional, and you can't, you look really stupid and go, well, I just like him because, you know, and that's a lot of it.
A lot of people will turn, like the what about issue, a lot of people do that, but the thing is that it's almost like saying that because other people do it, or other people have done things that are not great, that makes this okay. It doesn't make it okay in my mind.
You know what? You know what the bottom line is with all of this, with Trump, in the election that we had. Okay, we had on the left, we had Hillary Clinton, where you can't trust her as far as you could throw her. You had Bernie Sanders, who was a socialist. On the right, you had all these Republican candidates that didn't seem or portray themselves as genuine. For better or for worse, Trump portrayed himself more generous than the other candidates.
Isn't that interesting? When we've just you talk about how he portrayed himself as the most genuine, and he's the biggest scammer out of all of them.
But all right, so hear me. So let's keep going with this. We're trying to find somebody that's ethical, that's truthful, that really cares. People like that don't want to be president. They don't want to be bothered with that. You know,
that's the truth.
That's the problem.
I think whether you liked Obama's policies or not, I think most people who looked objectively at it said the guy was ethical. There was nobody ever indicted in the Obama thing. I mean, you had the Fast and the Furious, which was a little bit of a scandal, but nobody went to jail. Nobody was ever accused of anything. And people, most people, if they were being honest, whether you agree with his policies or not, felt Obama was trying to do what he thought was best for the country.
But what a lot of people perceived was a more socialistic approach.
But I'm not talking about that.
But what I'm saying is these are factors that led up to the 2016 election.
You said, why would somebody who's good-hearted, I'm not putting their policy aside, why would somebody who's good-hearted go for the job? And I was just saying most people perceived Obama, whether they thought his policies were socialist or not, they thought he was a good person doing what he thought was best. Now, you could disagree with it.
For the most part, yes. But, you know, moving on from – because it was like, well, we got to move on from that. Moving on from that, there are a lot of people – you get into this political arena that is so – You're so despicable. We either get ripped apart by Fox, we either get ripped up by CNN, and you get these people. Their family is going to be there. Your finances. Your family's going to get ripped through the mud. They're going to look up your ass every which way.
That's the
best part.
Let me provide the flashlight.
This is my territory.
This is serious.
Hold on.
Keep your sexy talk out of this. But anyway,
sorry to distract you with my ass. Aglow.
That's my work.
Go to break. No. Anyway, but you know, so why? You know, why would anybody really want to deal with this? So we're given this to choose from. You know, I mean, that's the way it is now. You know, and I'm on both sides of the aisle. This is what we were given to choose. You know, I mean, was there a better choice on either side? I don't know. But this was
well. Let's see. Hillary. I don't want to get into rehash the election. I don't want to keep John much longer. Hillary certainly had baggage. Some of it deserved. Some of it not deserved.
Right.
Hillary certainly had baggage. Bernie. I think most people thought Bernie was a good guy.
Yeah.
So whether he was too short, so you could go, he's a good guy there. I think most people thought John Kasich was a good guy. Now liberals would not like him because of his stance on abortion and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I think you could look at John Kasich as a good guy. I thought people thought Jeb Bush was a good guy. You know, they were just tired of Bush.
What I'm saying is,
at least on the Republican side where there were so many choices, because there was a lot of choices. The Democrats did not have a lot. On the Republican side, you could certainly find somebody who would appear to be more ethical.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Oh, yeah.
John, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, you know what? I love that you said the word appear to be more ethical. My personal belief is that when you get in the arena at that level, I don't think you can jump in that pool without getting wet, right? In some way, shape, or form, there's some house of cards nonsense going on with anybody who winds up sitting in that chair. So.
Yeah, but you don't have. There's one thing between being in the sitz bath. I mean, frolicking in the Pacific Ocean.
And it depends. You're looking for a guy that's willing to take the jump. You know, if you got a guy that's very qualified and wants to, and is all in on this, and you know, is ethical, you know, you're willing to sit in the sitz bath. But jumping in a piranha filled lake.
No, what I'm saying is, if we take John's take, and I don't know if it's right or wrong, that there's always going to be something. Yeah. What I'm saying is, let's take that. There's always going to be something, but it's not the track record that some have.
Right.
You could say Hillary if you wanted to, and I could say Donald if I wanted to. Mm-hmm. But like I said, the difference was the Republicans had so many other people to choose from.
Right.
You know, for Bernie.
Yeah.
But they couldn't deliver the message the way Trump could.
Well, no, he's a good salesman.
And that's why I wrote. He, looking at it in a part of, he couldn't deliver the message.
No,
the way
he's
Trump
a showman.
Could.
He's a showman. Do you have anything else to add, John?
No, you know what? The last thing is that, you know, thanks for the time. I appreciate it. And if you haven't watched yet, right, that How Did Trump Do It? Yes, he's a great salesman. But if you guys haven't watched Get Me Roger Stone yet, I mean, that guy Stone just did. It's the same playbook from Nixon to Reagan to what he did for Trump. Even, you know, MAGA, that was Make America, that was Reagan.
Yep.
And if you see so much of that book, that the playbook that Roger Stone created on how to spin that stuff and create the illusion, I think is really what put Trump over the top. And in closing, all I want to say, guys, is that I knew it was going to get political, but what Davin asked me to contribute are the factual facts about my personal interaction with the Trump organization. And I think it comes down to, with Trump, that old story of the frog and the scorpion, right? So what do you expect? It's what I do. So.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And like I said, we, you know, my old place dealt with him too. And yeah, we knew, you know, I'm like, oh no, it was a pleasure. No, we knew what it was like going in, you know.
Like dealing with Steve Bix.
Yeah, yeah, we just wanted to come out. You know, we figured if we can come out with at least half of our ass, we'd be okay, you know.
So, John, where can people see you on stage?
Let's see. Tomorrow night, I'm going to be in the little room at Governor's.
Great room, great room.
And the little room at Governor's in Levittown, Long Island. And then next weekend, I am going to a lot of road stuff. I'm one of those road guys, so I don't know where people are listening.
All over the world.
All over the world.
All over the world. Tell them where you're going
to
be.
All over the world. What was I thinking? I forgot who I was talking to.
Clearly.
What I'm really excited about, and I know it's a long way out, guys. You guys are gonna laugh at me, but I'm actually doing a two camera shoot at the Comedy Cove in Springfield, New Jersey. It's not gonna be till June, but it's the first thing where I've actually had, you know, some professional video done. And
nice.
Just want to give the Comedy Cove a shout out and thank them for the opportunity. I've been working there for a few years. And
what weekend is that?
And give me this opportunity to do that video. So.
What weekend is that if people want to come down and support you?
Well, it's not till June. It's actually going to be the 23rd and 24th of June, and we'll be filming both nights. And then any place between then, if anybody has any interest, Consoli.com. I'm sorry, Consoli Comedy. Consoli.com. ConsoliComedy.com's got my dates up there. So,
all right, buddy.
If I'm coming to your town, come out and say hello.
John, we appreciate your time and your honesty, and I'll talk to you soon.
Great, great, John. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
Take care, buddy. Right. See you out there.
Bye.
That was really interesting. Yeah, I didn't know
the
only
type of radio I provide, dear. Can't all be my inability with hookers.
Well, but that's
a story for another day, huh?
That was a story for waiting for you.
Sorry, I'm part of the bird expedition trying to get up here.
In Antarctica.
Jeez. Okay.
The bird expedition. That's fucking funny.
Thank you. Tell stupid.
She just did.
All right.
See what I did there?
Oh, man.
She told you you were funny, and then said, tell stupid. I said, she just did. So you were stupid in that. No, that was interesting, and I did not know that your old company had the same reservation.
No, I had no idea.
That's why I was saying. I go, good. I got a couple of things to say, too. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's helpful that you have a microphone in front of you.
See how things work?
All works for a reason, Joe. All works for a fucking reason.
That's the work you supply.
Well, no, I mean, listen, like I said, when you've hurt that many people, I'm certainly not going to trust you with the keys to the country.
Yeah, no.
That was an evaluation I made quickly.
I kind of think, and I know the things go on in business, but I kind of feel like that's total bullshit to have to mark up your product that much because you know the cash can hurt you.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, it's a Trump job. You want to get in there, but you know what it is like going in. It's like every customer is different.
Yes.
So if you go in, you know, a guy, look, I'll pay. I want it at this price. And this is not a Trump organization, but you have one phone call. How much is it? Well, you know what? I'll give you an extra $5 at a cash discount. He's a good payer, blah, blah, extra mm-hmm. $5. You go in this guy. You know, my place now, sometimes we take in people at a slow pace, but our markup is there.
Right.
You know, so you go in. Sometimes, you know, you try to work it out. Well, sometimes you get your ass burned. But, you know, if you go in and you get your markup, and you know, it's going to be 120 days. All right, so we're going to go in at a 40 to 45 markup, and if that's what it's going to take.
That's fine for the people who know, like your company did.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate for the ones who had to learn the lesson.
Well, you know, that's business sometimes, you know.
I mean,
not ethical business.
Damn, 120?
Not a perfect world. It's not a perfect world.
But my whole point is it might not be a perfect world, but I don't need to put somebody in charge who's going to make it less perfect.
Well, if they could give us a better choice,
You turned on your boy Cuomo. Recently you liked, but then I saw you posted something anti-Cuomo a couple of weeks ago.
I just don't like his stance with some things.
I understand that, but I mean, his stance has always been the stance. I was surprised that you liked him.
I did with something. I like him in a sense. I don't agree with a lot of his policies, but I like him. In a sense that he's a lot of hands on with things.
That's what always gets these guys in trouble.
Well, funny, but sometimes he micromanages a lot more. I mean, with the whole it's interesting with the whole subway tunnel that he figured out a way to do it cheaper, but the construction of the tunnel isn't as going to be as good. But I don't trust the MTA as far as I could throw him.
Oh my God, that's
terrible. He's fighting with the MTA about it. Meanwhile, I'm trying to cut corners here, but meanwhile he spent almost $1 million on retiling. I forgot what tunnel. Because he wanted a blue stripe through it, and I'm like,
like so really
a lot of times you don't know what to think.
Segue us into comics in the news, but something I noticed in Joe's act.
Oh,
because Joe and I worked together Saturday. I noticed a classic Kari joke, a joke he's been doing for a long time. There was a portion that was omitted from the classic original Kari version. Joe likes to talk about on space. Going to space.
Mm.
And for years, Joe would talk about how he was upset that we didn't have the shuttles anymore and that we now... And this is the part that was omitted. Now we got to hitch a ride with the Russians. They're the enemy. That's like Kirk hitching a ride with the Klingons.
I forgot to see... You know what? I'll explain myself on it. I omitted it because the tie-in, and I should have used that. Where were you?
I was there. I watched it, obviously.
The fucking headset on me. Okay. I did admit that, but it wasn't conscious. I forgot to say that because basically what I do is I go into that part. I was talking about Gillette, the Gillette commercial, and how toxic masculinity, which I can remember the word now.
Now you got it.
For the record, I remembered it Sunday. I said it right Sunday show.
Just not Saturday when I was paying you.
And not Friday either.
It's a toxic phrase.
I'm an asshole.
No. Well,
you're looking for an argument?
So basically what I was talking about is part of that commercial was bullying. And then I go into this whole thing about bullying where, you know, you got to fight your own. And then I go into the bullying, and then I go into the whole space thing, that maybe the Space Force isn't, you know, stupid because now – and he changed it because I was saying – they were planning to go to the moon. They actually got a probe on the moon, so the joke kind of changed.
The Chinese. I know.
The Chinese.
That.
So I changed it up a little because I was going specifically, instead of they're planning to go to the moon, I go, they're on the moon. They got a little rover.
I was like, oh, Joe's fully on board now. Russia's no longer the enemy. That's what I thought.
No, not at all. Because
good
basically,
my
mind was so firm on doing the lead-in to the little module, the little rover thing they got in the moon, that I really didn't bring that up.
Okay.
I didn't shy away from that.
Oh no, I wasn't trying to shy away. I thought you just were no longer including because you didn't think Russia was the enemy.
No. And talk about, you know, trying to be shy on stuff. When we were working down in Myrtle Beach last year, there's a joke I do about going on the my baggage is overweight, and I go, the lady behind the counter comes, your bags are overweight, and I go, so are you. I put you on the plane for years. Because I don't write, and I don't own a pencil. I've been doing that joke.
You write a lot.
Yeah, but I thank you.
You always got new
stuff. But you know, that joke, it was like, it always went well. Yeah. And it's like, oh. So I had to change it to, I'm overweight, you put me on the plane. Huddle, 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 huddle. So, you know, we got, you know.
Turned it into you.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, that old joke I used to do about people that wear turbans, you know, it's like, you know, feel like we're being profiled.
Stop.
Oh, God almighty, I'd be run out.
That was always a big laugh.
Wait.
That was. But now in these politically correct times, you know the groan that you would get?
What's the line?
It's like people that wear turbans feel like they're being profiled, mm-hmm. and it's like, okay, quit dressing like the enemy, you know?
Oh, damn!
Right,
see, that's a fun. Oh. She goes
right
there.
Right,
I always
right.
laughed at it,
but
don't stop it! It's a fucking joke. It's a comedy club. For fuck's sake! You want to be a snowflake? There's plenty of them in the backyard. Knock it off.
They're all in my car now.
I mean, I don't even agree with it, but I'm going to stick up for the fucking joke. Yeah. It's a funny fucking joke. Funny wins.
But you know, I haven't done it in a while. But now I couldn't even think of reintroducing it because that, you know, that not that's a climb up the ladder now.
Next week when we have more time, when we don't have, I want to talk about the Trump effect on comedy.
Oh.
Because there's certainly something, and I saw it when Joe said it, and I know it's when I said what I would bring it up. There's a certain effect. But I want to get to other stuff tonight.
Yeah.
But remind me.
After the blizzard.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's get some comics in the news. And there we go. Louis C.K.
And now it's time for comics in the news.
Thank you, Joe.
So you're saying it when you have a guy. You want to do a Zeppelin song, you know, plant
so
hanging around.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the news article and hope that it's loud enough and hope it comes through on the podcast. Otherwise, we're going to have 2.5 minutes of suck. So, crank this up. Here we go. Crank that up.
Loud protest tonight outside a sold-out show by comedian Louis C.K. The demonstrators not pleased with the performer's record on sexual harassment. Tonight's show is the first of three sold-out performances at the Improv in San Jose.
News Tonight, Maria Medina talked with protesters and patrons before Louis C.K. took the stage.
And there was a brief scuffle here tonight when witnesses say a fan hit a protester, leaving him with a bloody nose. Despite that, the show and the protests continued without any other incidents. Their message,
shame,
was loud and clear.
He is a sexual harasser.
The protester stood right outside the door of San Jose Improv as Louis C.K. hit the stage. The controversy surrounding the comedian began a couple years ago.
How do women still go out with guys?
At the height of the Me Too movement, when a handful of women accused him of sexual harassment, and he later apologized. Then, just last month, he mocked survivors of the Parkland mass shooting, where 17 died.
It really angers me that he thinks that San Jose is a safe place, that he can come here in our town, that we're not going to protest. No, not in our town. It's not funny here. It's not funny anywhere.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Louis C.K.
Despite the backlash, all three of Louis C.K.'s shows in San Jose sold out. In fact, Tiff Teen was first in line tonight.
If they're good at what what they do and I appreciate their art, then I'm okay with continuing to appreciate it.
I'm here to laugh. I like him as a comedian. I'm able to separate the artist from what he does in his personal life.
San Jose Improv staff did not want to go on camera, but released a statement saying in part, "We see comedy as the final frontier, and we don't censor artists. We want them to perform without scrutiny. We trust that our audiences can decide for themselves what their limits are."
That is the attitude that allowed Bill Cosby to be a predator in the comedy field for so long.
A comedian expected to perform tonight and tomorrow as well in San Jose, but not everyone is laughing.
I think that the improv is showing real disrespect for women in the San Jose community.
That was Maria Medina reporting in San Jose.
So Louis C.K. is continuing his little comeback tour. So he did 3 sold-out shows at the Improv. There was protesters. Not really surprised.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's, like I said, he's going to sell out. He's going to be doing fine at these venues. He's going to be fine doing stand-up.
Right.
But so Joe's critique and a lot of other people's critique was he's not really addressing the issues that got him in this place. And then his new issue, which he talked about a couple of weeks ago, where we were talking about the Parkland kids.
Right.
So he addressed those issues in his act. He said, I like to jerk off and I don't like being alone. Yeah, he said.
So you're laughing.
I didn't say I didn't think it was funny.
That's a funny line.
And true. You see, the best comedy comes from truth, Joe.
That's right.
Yeah, he also said, if you ever need people to forget that you jerked off, what you do is you make a joke about the kids that get shot.
That's a funny line.
I'm glad you approved, Snowflake. She's giving me dirty looks. Oh, Pip, you're invading my safe space.
Would you like a comfort animal?
Yes, I would.
We'll get the alligator.
He also said, you've read the worst possible things you could read about a person, about me, and you're here. The whole point of comedy is right.
That's right.
He's going the moment.
See, that's a great, right.
The whole point of comedy is to say things that you shouldn't say. I don't know if that's the whole point, but he said that's the entire point. I don't know if that's the whole point. I mean, that's an aspect of it.
Right.
It's not really the point.
No, not the whole point.
No, the whole point is to make people laugh. That's the whole point.
But he's been doing, you know, he's been saying things you shouldn't say and been doing a great job with it for years.
I don't know. I never thought of him as that edgy. He talked about jerking off a lot.
Yeah, but I mean, but he's been saying
he also did it.
Sometimes a life imitates arts, Joe.
There you go. Well, in this case, yes.
So we got a standing ovation when he came out. There were females, they say about 60 to 40 men to women ratio. That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it felt like a normal fun night. Nobody in the audience had a problem with anything he was saying. Of course not. Why would they? They fucking paid admission.
Yeah,
and they knew what they were getting. It's not like he fucking jerked off on them. It's a Gallagher show.
This is a self-selecting group. They paid to go.
Yes, which is fine.
Yeah.
And those people have a right to see him, and this guy can have a career. You know, I'm not really upset about the protest. People can do what they want. Mm-hmm. It's going to have zero effect.
Right.
Because the clubs that are going into business with Louis C.K. know exactly what he is.
Yes.
So those protests are not going to have an effect.
And it's going to be a packed night. Like I said, when Louis was at Governor's, the show was word of mouth over word of mouth, not over social media, but emails passing it on.
Right.
Place was 3 sold out shows. I went there. Like I said, I was just going next. A buddy was having a birthday party in the little room where John's going to be there, the little room.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get near the club.
Yeah.
You know, and I couldn't even get near the line.
Well, I mean, you know, it just goes to show you, you can pretty much do anything. You can still sell tickets.
Right.
I mean, people don't really, you know, separate the artist from, a lot of people don't. A lot of people are done with Louis C.K. I think he's done as far as Hollywood.
I think so.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I don't think he's going to get any, unless one of his buddies,
at least for quite a while.
Unless like a buddy like Seinfeld or Chris Rock, but I think that's close, but I think he'll be fine. What do you think of the standing ovation?
For that line? Really?
Well, no, that was at the end of the show he got a standing ovation.
Oh, okay.
It's not like they did it on a joke-to-joke basis.
I mean, these are people that like his particular brand of comedy. I don't see the people that went to see that show as having performed some kind of like political movement. They just like his brand, and they're not as offended by some of the things he did as other people are.
I do have to call out the Improv for a second. He goes, comedians don't get censored at the Improv. Now, I don't know this club in particular, but I'm really going to give him a big, really? I have a feeling if you're not selling out the place, comics get censored.
Oh, yeah. Sure. And another thing about the standing ovation is that you've got people that are fans. You're that big of a fan. If your comedy hero comes out, you're going to get a standing ovation. Okay? Kevin James and Louis C.K. are worlds apart. But here's the deal: Kevin is working on new material, and he's been at governor's. He was governor's on Saturday night. He was supposed to be at governor's on Sunday night, and I think he was at the brokerage on Friday. But the thing about it is when Kevin comes out, okay, when Kevin is in the green room, we'll all go out to the main showroom, and the MC will come out and go, "Ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest. He grew up on Long Island. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin James." And people are like, "What? It's going to be some guy pretending to be Kevin James." Hey, Kevin walks out. Place goes berserk.
Right.
Standing ovation. Cameras going off because Kevin is like, you know, a comedy hero.
Mall Cop 2 really affected a lot of people.
Yeah, but still, in that,
but
you know.
He didn't get caught up in any of that controversial
but if,
stuff.
But if no, it is somebody.
Not.
But absolutely. And like I said, I preface this with, you know, Louis C.K. and Kevin James, worlds apart in their personal life and in their approach to comedy.
Right.
However, if you are a fan, and this guy, and you're a small, and this guy comes out, you know, you're standing up and you're applauding it on these guys on these major levels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, if you're,
so you're not, so you're saying it wasn't really an earned standing of it, not earned from the material.
No, no,
earned
it's
from
not
a reputation, a career.
Yeah, fantastic job of prefacing that. Yes, exactly.
Well, I have this mic, yeah.
But in both.
Hey, knock it off. See there, there's the voice, nice and quick for you.
Oh, thank you. Nice. It's busting his balls.
Nice and quick,
yeah,
for you.
I'll be when you bust yours.
Robbie,
right, nice and quick for you. That's what just looks at.
Rob Epple,
we come together.
I got to the gig Saturday. Rob Epple must have felt like a baby because we start arguing because we mentioned the term kicking ass and taking names.
Yeah.
And Davin said it's a stupid term, and I'm not. I didn't think of. I thought it was a damn good. And we start arguing about it. Robbie goes, "You two are a piss." Dad was like, "You don't know us." I'm listening to the show.
By the way, Rob Epple's impression of me still sucks.
Yeah, it stinks on ice. I love Robbie to death. Yeah, but it's not good.
I forgot that he did it on the show. I mean, he like did in front of me and Joe. Like, were you trying to just do me? He goes, "Yeah, I know it's not good. It's better than the car." I'm like, "No, it's just awful."
It's better than the car.
And I look,
no.
I go, "I love you, but it's not good."
It's awful. It didn't have like the words I say, the mannerisms, the sound. I was like, and for you guys hear me fucking more than anybody.
Even if he turned around and said, no, you're going, yeah.
Really?
All right, that's good. Yeah,
really? That's better.
No, and a really. Yeah, all right, yeah. That's cool. Yeah,
you're working on it. All right. See you working there.
You know, mannerism stuff like, yeah. Yeah.
No.
Do better.
No, Rob. Yeah,
that's you.
Funny. Yeah, Rob Epple needs to do better with his impression. That's neither here nor there. I like the jokes that address the controversy. I mean, it wasn't in depth, and people get pissed off that he's joking about. But that's a damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Right.
He had to start, you know, like I said, my critique of it, he has to start. He's a comic. Comics call, you know, the first thing is call the moment. He needs to address that. And and it actually, you know, you address that and then it kind of calms everybody down. Well, not calms everybody, but it kind of, you know, you kind of address
the elephant
in the room.
His detractors are going to, oh, he shouldn't be joking about it.
The detractors are
going to please anybody.
The detractors, if he raised the dead, his detractors would still bust his
probably
balls.
Raise on
so
just
the
to
hell
watch
with,
jerk off.
Well, hell with what they think. You need to go with the people that are following
him. Look, I understand the joke. I mean.
Which joke?
The one, you know, I like jerking off and I just don't like doing it alone.
Yeah.
I understand the joke. Uh-huh. I just can't get past that he was doing that to women. Was stuck in the room with him.
Well,
people that work for him. It's like, what if that's your fucking daughter?
Well, you're
going
to have to get past it because there's no going back now.
No,
he
I know.
Can't put he can't put his cock back in his pants and pretend it never happened.
No, but I don't have to give him any money either.
No, you don't.
I'm
that's
still
fine.
Irritated.
That's fine. And you have that right.
Yeah.
But people were saying, you know, he should comment on it. Well, he did.
He did.
Yeah. And I thought the jokes were pretty good considering.
He was damned if he did, damn
right.
He doesn't. But I'm just like, nah.
And you got to remember too. Now that he's addressing, he's doing more spots, and he gets a gig.
Yeah.
You know, he's trying
he's
to get back
this week.
Yeah, and he's starting to get back into the clubs. People
right.
have an attention span of a gnat.
I know.
You know, oh Jesus Christ! Yeah, another year, they'll go on to the next thing.
Oh, absolutely, because there'll be something worse.
Should we do the Patton Oswalt story?
Yeah, because that's not a long one. We should talk about that.
Michael Beatty wasn't the greatest of moods Thursday afternoon. The 64-year-old Huntsville, Alabama, had recently returned home from a 2-week stay at a hospital where he said he fell into a coma because of complications from diabetes and sepsis. Moreover, the Republican social media feeds were filled with posts he didn't agree with, he said, further souring his emotional state. Because often my mood gets soured when social media doesn't agree exactly with me.
Yeah, but he was sick, so...
Yeah, I got to tell you, social media never... Like, just because people disagree, it doesn't really...
No.
It doesn't really sour my mood.
Yeah, it
bunch of people going
sometimes.
on about Trump, I expect it. It's social media. Well, look at that meme. He looks handsome in that one. One of those posts came from comedian Patton Oswalt, whose critical tweet about President Trump pushed Beatty over the edge. I just realized why I was so happy you died in Blade Trinity.
Oh my God. That's a funny line.
Citing the 2004 film Oswalt acted in. He also referred to Oswalt as a sawed-off little man. In an interview Thursday, Beatty said he didn't think Oswalt would ever read his replies, but the comedian responded before taking things a step further, pointing his 4.5 million followers towards Beatty's GoFundMe account, created to help cover his medical expenses. Oswalt donated $2,000 to the fund, which had previously accumulated just over $600. In a sudden outpouring of support, the donations began pouring in. The fund had accumulated more than $21,000 as of Thursday evening. Aw, man, this dude just attacked me on Twitter, and I joked back. But then I looked at his timeline, and he's in a lot of trouble health-wise. I'd be pissed off, too. He's been dealt some shitty cards. Let's deal him some good ones. Click and donate just like I'm about to. So Beatty said, I would never have imagined, based on what I tweeted to him, Beatty said. If anything, I expected a scathing retort or just to be ignored. But that's not what happened. Beatty, who says he is living off his retirement check, said he became sick after not properly treating his diabetes. He developed sepsis and diabetic ketoacidosis. Fucking Mary Poppins.
That's it.
I was thinking the same thing.
Ketoacidosis.
I was trying to put the tune together, so then I heard, all right, yeah.
Serious Copley. Oh, we're laughing at his illness. Look at us. We're no Patton Oswalt.
Look at the name, you know?
Yeah. He didn't come up with it. Serious complications come from his diabetes that nearly killed him in December. Beatty fell into an 8-day coma during his extended hospital stay and is now recovering, he said. But needed help paying medical bills that were starting to trickle in. Enter Oswalt, whose generosity helped transform Beatty's acidic remarks into compassionate prose. You've humbled me to the point where I can barely compose my words. You have caused me to take pause and reflect on how harmful words from my mouth could result in such an outpouring. Thank you for this, and I will pass this on to my cousin who needed help, a cascade. The two continue this banter with Oswalt joking that he'd take away his donation because Beatty showed emotion. The man said he hoped to attend one of Oswalt's shows if the comedian ever performed in the area. Beatty said the positive replies he's received from people of various creeds and political affiliations have meant just as much as the donations. He's tried to reply to everyone he can, and the once staunch Trump supporter said experience has shifted his perspective. After today, I tend to think I'm a tempered Republican, he said, adding he wants to abandon the sheep-like mindset he's adopted, which has caused him to judge people based on what they believe. I'm having to reevaluate some of the things I've gone along with. The biggest thing I learned about Oswalt is that he's a man of character. All right, a couple things here. Interesting story. First of all, Patton Oswalt is clearly a tremendous human being.
Because
he's had his own tragedy in the past couple of years.
His wife died.
Passed away suddenly. So he's a mensch, this Patton Oswalt.
I was going to use the exact same word. He really is.
Yeah. So now this has to be talked about because this is a multi-layered story.
I don't want to discuss it.
Pip and I have to talk about this. You sit quietly and play with your toenails.
Here, have some almonds.
Give the monkey a toy. Beatty lives in a Republican state that did not go with Obama's plan of expanding Medicare for all. So what you have, and Beatty's not alone in this, so he's just one of many, he has to do a GoFundMe page. GoFundMe is essentially begging.
Yes.
This man worked his entire life. And now he is ill, and he's reduced to begging from strangers so that he can survive. It strikes me as so wrong. I guarantee you, before this guy got ill, he hated Obama and Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is the Republicans did not have a better plan, which we've all agreed with. And because it was an Obama idea, red states, with some exceptions, I know Ohio implemented Medicare for All, did not implement it. So what you have is you have citizens becoming destitute and beggars over the crime of being sick. First world countries don't treat their citizens this way.
No, they shouldn't.
I mean, this guy is everything Joe would look for in a citizen. Guy worked his whole life, you know, judging by what we know of him. You know, has a lot of the same principles as Joe, you know, paying his bills. The guy gets sick earlier in life trying to live off of his retirement, which some people don't even have retirement.
Right.
So he must have had a decent job mm-hmm. where he could have retirement. And now he's got to beg. And it just strikes me as so wrong. You can't consider yourself the best country in the world, like we like to say.
Yeah.
If you have, for lack of a better term, good citizens who are reduced to begging in their later years who played by the rules. Again, I don't know this guy's life story. But it seems like you know, 9 to 5, ham and egger. You know, had a job. He's gotten ill like we all do later in life. Not really that old, too.
No, not terribly old.
So,
and it's like something befell him. It's like, is this the way that we? This is the way we look at things. Is that anybody who is has a medical emergency is a beggar now? That's the
and
way
GoFundMe
we look at people.
Is begging.
It is.
It's not much different than working the corner with a pot.
You're holding a cup full of pencils.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
sad.
I'm sorry. I'm cutting you off.
That's okay. Go ahead.
But here's the deal. You know, with the whole thing, you know, we have to do something about the healthcare system.
Yes.
However, you know, you talk about this guy being in the hospital. There was probably 2 doctors that went in there that looked at him and said, okay, walked out, charged $3,000. Mm-hmm. You probably had an overcost on the medications, you know, and a lot of redundancy going on. Now, my whole thing is instead of having Obamacare where you're funding all this, what they should do is have government regulation where there, you know, an oversight on how the medical profession is done, on tort reform, on, you know, redundancy of care.
But the right doesn't want oversight. They want less regulations.
Yeah.
So you're actually flying in the face of what traditionally you side with,
your
party.
In a way, yes, I am. Because, and I've always – and this isn't a revelation. I've said this before. There needs to be something done about the way we treat medical care. But I believe it is from a free market system and having it regulated where they're –
Well, if you're regulating, you're not really free market. Well, so which do you want?
Well, a free market system where you could buy health care, you know, you could go state to state, you know, you could buy another state.
But
you
free
know.
Market means they get to charge what they want. And on the other hand, you're saying, listen, we need to crack down on them marking up an aspirin 3,000%. So you're kind of an opposite.
Okay, well, all right. So let me rephrase myself. I'm on it where it's a little bit more competitive, but there are things where you can't charge that. There has to be an oversight and redundancy, you know, just to cut the cost of medical care down or to make it more manageable.
So not to get all political here. I don't want to do that now. We got 2 years of a fucking election coming. But anyway, Kamala Harris, I don't know how much you know about her. She's a California senator. She said she agrees with getting rid of taking the insurance companies out of the equation for medical care. Mm-hmm. She feels that a lot of the markups go on with there, and if you got rid of them, you probably have more of the government regulation you talk about, because then now the government's paying for it. Mm-hmm. Is that something you could support, getting the insurance companies out?
It's a tough call on that, because you're taking the bureaucracy of an insurance company out and putting the bureaucracy of government in
there.
Well,
I think what you're doing, ideally, and I agree they're both bureaucracies, I agree with you with that, but ideally what you're doing is you're taking the profit motive out of healthcare.
Right.
Insurance companies, like capitalism. And I've always argued, and they're there to make money. I've always argued not everything has to be about money-making things. When it comes to plumbing, you know, stuff, yes, money-making. Comedy, money-making, absolutely.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about essentials like healthcare, I'm over the story. Go, you know what? Not everything has to be we make the most. We suck every last dollar out.
Right.
So it seems like you'd be open to hearing what she had to say about that.
You would need to see the bullet points on either side of this, because it's a very slippery slope. The way the bureaucracy, you know, you could have an insurance company telling you they're not going to cover that, or you can have the government telling you they're not going to cover something.
Well, that's true too. But
you know,
I would think they're going to cover more stuff.
I don't know.
The government tells you we're going to cover everything, and we're going to be competitive with what other countries are paying for the medication, because everybody knows we pay the most,
mm-hmm.
and Medicare can't negotiate with the pharmacies.
Right.
But they say we're going to be so it's going to cost you the same for aspirin here that does in Canada and Mexico. It's going to be within X amount, that variety, as opposed to now the hospitals and the insurance company can charge you as much as they want. Would you be for that?
A little bit, because you just sold me on one. You just brought in one aspect of it.
Well,
you just brought the medication.
Break down healthcare for
but
you.
We need to. We
not,
need to.
Not on this show with limited time and
stuff. But what I'm telling you is this is serious enough where you do have both bureaucracies.
But you're open to it. You're open to
of
more.
Of course I'm open.
You're open to a leftist style of
because
healthcare.
I'm open to hearing about it, because basically the bureaucracy, and like I said, I'm not like, oh, yeah, the insurance companies are doing a damn fine job. No. But it's two bureaucracies, and you've got to find out which was going to be the best one, who's going to have your best interests in mind.
Yeah, and I mean, we can't be a society where we're just saying, you know, you can't afford your health care, so screw you. because that leaves too many people out of the equation. And I understand what you're saying. I mean, the fact that Big Pharma is making money hand over fist at everybody's expense. I understand that a lot of money has to go into looking at the like experimentation and developing new pharmaceuticals and everything. But look at their profit margin. Come on.
Yeah. Well, that's the. But you know, I went into the endocrinologist, and my copay was I actually have to sit with Oxford and go over. My copay was $200.
Yeah, that's crazy.
As much as you like to rail against socialism, you do agree it would seem there are some places where maybe as a society we would benefit from socialism in some places.
If the quality was there.
Well, the quality sucks now. Compared to what we pay for what we get sucks currently. We're not getting the bang for the buck when you compare ourselves to other Western nations and the infant mortality rate and our lifespan. Mm-hmm. We like to think that we're the best, and we have some brilliant physicians.
Don't
get me wrong. But if you look at what we're actually getting for what we pay, we're not doing well.
So
you're a capitalist. I think we're all capitalists here. But you are open to socialism if in your opinion, it would work better if you saw the talking points. You are interested in entertaining socialism for medical care.
Yeah, if you saw the talking points and you saw, you know, because, you know, basically, and both, you know, you're talking socialism, you're talking about two bureaucratic entities.
Right.
So when you say, well, it's social, yeah, but it's a bureaucratic entity. And it's like, well, I'm not going to go with a bureaucratic entity. Well, the medical, you know, the health company, you know, insurance company, they're a bureaucratic entity. So in this, and like I say, I take things case by case. I said this on this show so many damn times that I don't walk in lockstep. I take things case by case.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, healthcare, we're discussing healthcare. In this case, I would entertain it seeing what both sides were going to provide.
And that's fair. But I would ask from you is not to next time we're talking about somebody, whether it be Bernie or AOC, she's a socialist. I want you to remember this point. There are some aspects of it where you possibly could get on board. No, none of us here want a completely socialist country.
Because it doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
But once again, in the context of this discussion,
this is an important discussion.
My whole thing was who pays? We all pay, but
yes, we all pay. That was the mandate.
I'm not finished yet. Who pay? But if I'm paying, am I better off paying for this bureaucracy operation or this bureaucratic operation?
Well, the whole thing behind Obamacare, which they took, they've gutted Obamacare. The whole mandate for the whole individual mandate was you had to pay. Yes, you don't need it now, you 23-year-old. But by the time you're 67, the whole theory behind it is, and the whole theory behind it, any type of insurance, that's really what it is, insurance.
Yeah.
You get the shit when you're healthy, so by the time when you're sick, it's there for you.
Yeah.
That's the whole theory.
But the problem, where the theory kind of failed was a lot of kids in their 20s are saying, you know what, I don't really need it. You know,
right,
so
But that's why the mandate was there.
Right, and that's
because
why
you have to pay. You're going to kick in now, and you know what? People in their 20s get sick too.
It's like Social Security.
Yeah, it's like anything.
But a lot of
it's like car insurance. You don't need it until you crash.
Yeah, but the thing was they weren't getting the insurance. They were just paying a fine.
Which is a problem. So maybe
that's what the problem.
That's a different thing than was argued, though.
But that's been the problem with that now, and I can understand that because at that age, you think you're invincible. I didn't have insurance till I was 26, and what happened was I used to run. I used to run all the time, and I bruised the kidney. I was peeing blood.
Oh my god!
And I'm like, holy! I didn't know it was so. I had to go. I had a battery test and stuff like that, and this, that, and the other thing. And I think it was like about
still paying for them.
Yeah, sure. I think it was about $1,500 or $1,200 or something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, by the time and my mom paid for it, and she said, "I'm footing the bill for this." But next time you're on your own, do you understand me? You go out right now and you get health insurance because I thought I was invincible.
Yeah.
And you have kids in their 20s.
You just made another argument for insurance because some people don't have their mom
to bail them out. But what I'm saying is a lot of these kids have that mindset that
yes,
I did and said, I'll just pay the fine and did not go
but
into
what,
the
what
plan.
What the government was saying, like your mother said, we know better. That's essentially what the government was saying. You think you don't need it. You might not, but you might. Your mom was essentially saying
the
same thing.
But the problem is with socialism, that's the whole government's thing. We know better. And, you know, and that's
the
whole thing.
But it turns out they might when it comes to healthcare. Again, none of us want a socialist country.
No.
But socialized medicine, I can get behind. because I see how other people live. And like this guy's a perfect example. This guy worked his whole life as a retirement. He gets sick. He shouldn't have to do a GoFundMe.
No.
You know, a lot of people are like, oh, they're lazy. Why don't you get health care? Because sometimes you work.
Well, why didn't he? Couldn't he get? Why couldn't he get Obamacare?
Because it wasn't expanded in Alabama, which is a red state. That's why.
Was it available?
Yes. Well, no, his governor didn't make it available. Every state had the option where the federal government would subsidize it. But because it was Obama's, they didn't do it. Kasich was the exception. There might have been other red states too. But Kasich was the exception in Ohio, and they've seen a lot of positive results in it. Unfortunately, I don't want to get into the whole Trump thing. But anyway, that in blue states we tend to have better options here, Joe, because we live in New York than somebody in Alabama does. Mm. Because we have a Democratic governor who wanted to get the help.
Right. Well, the bottom line is you're saying, well, we need to do better with it. I'm agreeing.
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm agreeing. I'm going to rehash everything. But, yeah, and this issue, I've always said it, something needs to be done, but we need to go in the inside
out.
You're
going to hear a lot of liberals coming at Trump. You're going to hear a lot of liberals coming with this approach, whether it be Bernie or Kamala Harris or others.
Look, they did a shit job with Trump care, okay? Yeah. And you know,
Trump care.
With the thing they were putting together, and I mean that's the Republicans not. Yeah,
but what
you
I'm
know,
saying, what I'm saying
yeah.
is
have been clueless.
They
dropped
the ball. Health care is an important issue to you, which I don't know if it will be by the time 2020 rolls around. But you're going to hear a lot from the left. Now, there's probably going to be things that they say that you're going to hate. But if healthcare is a big issue, you're going to hear a lot of things from the left about what we discussed. So I look forward to, as these proposals get rolled out, getting your thoughts. Okay. Good?
Yeah. Like I said, when they were trying to abolish Obamacare and redo it, you got my thoughts then. The Republicans are doing an absolute shit job on it. Absolute
yeah.
horrendous
Yeah, they
job.
Dropped the ball terribly.
So absolutely. Empathy has been a topic of late on our show.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's for the children of the asylum seekers at the border or our own citizens not collecting paychecks because of the government shutdown, I feel there's a lack of empathy in this country. And it's really easy to forget that we're all people, even if they're just not like us or we don't know them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we've all become so isolated for whatever reasons that we fail to look outside of our immediate family and our immediate selves.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm increasingly frustrated by the lack of empathy people display. Especially when they're rooting for their political team. Like, if it's better for my team, whether it be blue or red, if it fucks those people, all the better.
Right.
I'm seeing a lot of that, and we've had these conversations. And I don't want it to be, and it's shaping up this way, I don't want it to be where only one party, and right now it seems like the Democrats, are the most empathetic, are the only party that shows empathy. I don't think it serves our country well.
No.
I think both parties do. Now, you can have different ways. You can have different solutions to problems. That's traditionally been the difference between the conservatives and the liberals. They have different solutions.
Yeah.
How are we going to solve them?
Well, different ideologies. I mean, the Republican ideology is that less government intrusion and you're accountable for oneself instead of the government being, for the government being accountable
for
you.
But that's not really the case anymore. That's a talking point. We're bailing out farmers because of a tree. You know, we're picking now who we bail out and who we don't bail out. Where somebody like me is, well, I don't like this trade deal that's going on, but I understand why we have to bail out the farmers, why my tax
money. Well, we've been bailing out farmers for years.
No, but this is even more because the price of soy has been in half because they can't sell to China. But what I'm saying, somebody like me is like, well, you know, I don't really want to have to bail out people to work. But so be it. We're bailing out farmers. That's the same thing with the government workers. Somebody like me is like, these people are getting fucked. They did nothing wrong. Just like the farmers did nothing wrong.
Yeah, but they're also getting their payback. They also get a fantastic pension, you know. So, you know.
Right, but you know. You don't have a fortune.
You know, nobody gave a damn about me when in defense was. That was the profession I chose, and I got laid off during the winter. I didn't see anybody crying about me. You know, that's the profession you chose
but
with the ramifications
you were able
that
to collect,
happen.
You were able to collect unemployment.
Yeah.
Well, right, but these government workers couldn't do that. In some of their jobs, they couldn't even get another job. So they just had no income, and if they wanted to keep the job they had, they couldn't go out and get another job, depending on the government agency.
Well, that's the chance you take when you take a job like
See,
that.
See, that's the last. But no, I don't think people count on that. And then if that's what we're saying, we're going to lose some of the best people. And I definitely don't want to lose that. I like the best people working for the common good.
Yeah. Now you definitely do want to have. I mean, you definitely want to have people that have a higher skill set doing the work for the country. But the idea that nobody cared for you, there was unemployment there for you. I mean, it's not great, but there was something there for
which
you,
which we all pay into,
right? But the other thing is that every single person could get laid off. Everybody could get fired. But this was a deliberate screwing over of like hundreds of thousands of people for political gamesmanship.
And now they're talking about putting something in there, making a law where you can't shut down the government. Which I think they should. That way the Dems can't do it and the Republicans can't do
it. I think that, I think neither of those should be able to do
that. Fucking negotiate
like
adults. Yeah. Figure it out.
Come to the table and do your job.
That's what I agree on.
Don't
hurt
innocent people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like I said, Schumer and Pelosi was just as guilty as Trump on this.
Yeah,
you know? They were. I mean, you know, they knew the ramifications too. So, you know, I mean, sit down with the guy, try to hash something out. At least show that you're giving an effort.
Well, I don't want to get all into this, but you got to remember, Trump was going to get $25 billion for a wall, and he was going to give them DACA in May. He was going to get a lot more. He had a fucking better deal on the table. And then, you know, he fucking listens to these right-wing pundits, and he gets scared off by amnesty. And the problem with Trump is he doesn't have fucking balls. Trump needs to fucking – I know the myth is he has balls. Trump needs to tell everybody right and left, go, no, no. And like he likes to say, I'm president. Yes, you are. I'm going to do this deal because I think this is what's in the best interest. It's not what I want.
But think about if Pelosi and Schumer went in there and agreed to that.
They had a deal. They had the deal. It was a bipartisan deal. The Republicans signed on for it. The Democrats signed on it. He had the deal. And then
he listened to the little voices on his shoulder going, you're a pansy. You gave in to them.
Yeah. He would have gotten $25 billion for his wall. A much fucking better deal. Now he's not going to. And the Dems had no power then. Now the Dems have a branch of government.
Are you talking back then? Or are you talking now?
I'm talking in May. He had a much fucking better deal than anything he's going to get now. And because again, he heard, and it was a bipartisan deal.
All right. I'm being the devil's advocate here.
Usually you are when talking about it.
Funny, but he probably felt maybe he could do better. You know. When crunch time,
nobody's done better. No, because Obama wanted something, W got wanted something. Nobody could. He would have looked like a hero.
But what I'm talking about is during the shutdown, where if Pelosi and Schumer went in there, and or even if they said we want to go back to the deal in May, why don't we go back to the deal in May? If Trump's reneged on that, he would look totally awful. I'm blaming the three of them. So, and what is frustrating me is when people are putting the blame on, you know, oh, these poor. All right, I get it.
But Trump said he would own it. And he'd be happy to not shut it down.
But let him own it, okay? But however, I mean, Schumer and Pelosi weren't hiding in a closet somewhere. They actually knew what was going on. Shouldn't they, for the good of these people, go and start to negotiate on it?
We got to remember, both the Republicans and the Democrats passed bills where they would keep the government open. While they negotiated individual bills to keep it branches of the government open, the Dems did it and the Republicans did it, and then Trump wouldn't sign it. So that's why it ultimately wound
up. And McConnell
up
pulled into a shell.
Right, but before that, before the Dems took over the House, they did a vote in the Senate, a voice vote, and it was like I think it was like unanimous. The Democrats and Republicans wanted to keep the government open. McConnell knows shutting down the government it doesn't work. He knows it. He knows it's bad politically. Whatever. I don't want to rehash.
So well, let's not rehash, but let's get. What do you think is going to happen on the 15th?
I think the best thing Trump could do, the smartest thing Trump could do, is he can get some money for fences and places where everybody agrees there's border walls, and he could, and probably they were going to get that money anyway, and he could spin it to his base because his base is never going to leave him. I know he panics about them; they're not going to leave him and go, listen, I got you the wall. We're getting even more money than I anticipated for security because we're doing the ports. This is a win. I did better for you, and his base will believe it, and the left will give him that. I think that would be the move.
And still with the wall, even with the wall, he was saying, look, it's not all for a wall. There are spots where a wall is not really required.
It depends on the day with him, though. Some days he's talking logic.
But he said it in the address to the country.
Here's the problem with Trump, and this is what the Republicans know about him, the Democrats know about him. His fucking mind changes too much, so you can't negotiate with him. That's another reason McConnell wasn't getting involved. He's been burned before. They don't know how to negotiate with this guy because he changes his mind. That's what I'm saying. This guy needs to fucking show balls. He can look like a hero and tell Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and Nancy Pelosi, anybody else, he go fuck you to everybody. I cut the deal. Listen, it's not perfect, but presidents before me tried to cut a deal. They couldn't get it. I cut the deal. We're not going to have the big beautiful wall, but my job as the president is to keep us secure. And with the deal I cut with the Democrats, we're more secure now. He could do that. He'd look like a hero. He would hear from Ann Coulter for like a minute, and then she'd fucking disappear.
Well,
she's nobody. He's the president.
Well, what he's got to figure out is, you know, it's all optics. So basically,
but he doesn't. But that's what I'm saying. He doesn't have to worry about optics. This guy's in a unique position. His 35%, people like you, for the most part, are not going to leave this guy. John even said it when Trump said, "If I shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue, they would stick by him." He is right. He's got to stop fearing his base. It's time that he leads. Those people, he can spin it. And again, John says he's experienced. He can spin shit like nobody else can spin it. There is a deal to be cut. He has the opportunity, and he's always had this opportunity, to be a leader. But he's a fucking fraidy cat. He's a coward.
And some, you know, we're seeing, we're finally seeing how business is done in a political arena.
I think we knew.
No, we haven't seen. To give you an example, and this is a minuscule example, but to give you an example, there's a product line that I sell that we, with our old regional manager, we cut a deal where our margin is so slim that we are get free goods if we buy a certain amount. The new regional, oh, we're not doing this deal, not doing this deal. So I said, put the order on hold. I have committeds against this fucking order.
Yeah.
You bullshit. I want, my boss was away, but I said, put it
but
on.
But it's harder to do that when you have people's lives.
And that's kind of what I'm getting at. You do things from a business perspective, and we're seeing how the business perspective in a political arena is in works in some circumstances and in some circumstances.
I think
circumstances,
you just made an argument for Hillary Clinton.
But
that was the thing. He's not experienced.
No, not experienced, but he's experienced in a business arena. But in this arena, you're doing things in a business way that might not work in a political arena.
And that was an argument against President Trump. It's like, no, you can't run it. That's what people didn't understand. Time and time again, said you got to run it in a like a business. In certain ways, yes. You know, don't fucking go spending ridiculously, which they're doing now, too. But
the end goal is different for business than government.
It's not about getting
different
the
jobs.
The end goal in business is to get rich. The end goal here is to keep everybody alive, healthy, happy, make us all better. It's a different end goal. And also, remember, he was his own boss. He didn't have people to answer to. It was a very mom-and-pop organization. Whatever Trump said went. He's got other branches of government. He's got
people to tell him no.
Right. He's got the courts. Mm-hmm. He's got the Congress, and he's got the Senate. So it wasn't even like this guy was like a CEO who had other board members to fucking answer to.
Mm-hmm.
This guy, you know, would be like me. You know, I don't answer to anybody,
mm-hmm.
and now I'm running the country. Oh shit! I gotta value what other people say. Well, it's a different animal.
Yeah. Could be. Yeah, could be. We'll see what happens on the 15th. And also, these 4 years are going to be changed how politics is going to be done for years to come, for good or bad or for indifferent. I mean,
He's changed the country. I'll give you that.
So it's a it's a learning experience on
but
how.
It is interesting though that now you're thinking maybe a businessman is not ideal because like now the guy from Starbucks wants to run.
And I'm
just like enough. And
Trump told him, "Oh, if it's going to affect my real estate payments."
No, Trump wants him to run because it's going to help him.
Yeah.
But I was like the same way when Oprah might run. No, fucking stop. Give me the fucking people in the arena and the politicians. I know what we're dealing. They know how to get shit done.
Yeah.
Might not always be the way I like it to get done. It might be kind of shady and shitty.
Right.
But they know how to get shit done,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to what we are dealing with now, where it's just a soap opera,
just butting heads.
It's no good. So it's interesting. Yeah. Interesting. All right. We're not going to do the third segment. That's for sure.
Yeah, I was going to point at the watch. I'm like, guys.
No, we're
guys.
Not gonna do that. We're going to get out of here is what we're going to do. So we're not going to take another break. And I guess I get to figure out some tech shit later. Were you able to fix your tech issue?
Yes.
You found the error?
I did.
You found the error in your ways.
And I fixed it.
All right, so now we're posted.
Look at Mika. You're posted.
All right, very good. Scammer clips are online now.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah, so you can go listen to our scammer clips.
Yes,
and
it's like an assembly line the way we do things.
I know, it is.
This assembly line is fucking going to change right quick. It's going to cost me a decent amount of money to fucking do it, but this shit's got to stop.
Oh, my God.
Because I've had enough.
Yeah, I pulled my own tooth tonight trying to get that done.
What?
It's like pilling teeth. I pulled my own tooth. Mm. Yeah, I know.
It's all right, you try. And we love you for it.
You both look at me like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
What the fuck, Hendrick?
You haven't seen any fucking teeth on the floor. What are you talking about?
It's the meth.
Tower of Energy is an energy solutions consulting company that specializes in residential and commercial lighting solutions, run by a 15-year lighting professional who can guide you through the world of architectural-grade, environmentally friendly lighting for your home or commercial property. What?
Me?
You!
Yeah!
Tao, T-A-O of Energy, is on the cutting edge of today's lighting technology. You can find them on Facebook by searching Tao of Energy, LLC.
Portobello is Bergen County, New Jersey's most exclusive fine dining Italian restaurant. The Tuscan Villa setting will make you feel like you've been transported to the old country. And every dish is prepared with care and attention to detail. And the Portobello chefs are happy to cater to any dietary need, thus ensuring every visit is not just a meal but an experience. Portobello is open for lunch and dinner Monday through Saturday. And on Sunday, Portobello features a sumptuous brunch in addition to their dinner menu, which is available all day. Friday, Saturday nights, Portobello features live entertainment starting at 9 p.m. Portobello Banquets is your destination for that special event, such as a Sweet 16, wedding, office party, or anything that has to impress. And their professional staff will ensure that your event will not be just an occasion, but a memory. Portobello Banquets also hosts popular comedy nights throughout the year, which are produced by Side-Splitting Productions owner Davin of Davin's Den. March 29th, we have a great show coming up, so check that on out. Experience all that Portobello has to offer, 175 Ramapo Valley Road in Oakland, New Jersey. Or learn more, give them a call, 201-337-8990. That's 201-337-8990. Or check out their website, PortobelloNJ.com. You deserve the best. You deserve Portobello.
That would be
you. Oh, yeah. No. Just languishing it all. Side-Splitting Productions, all your entertainment needs. We've had a bunch of good shows lately, making a bunch of people happy. You guys should jump on board and be part of that. Number 551-404-3094, 551-404-3094, SideSplittingProductions.com.
When you're not listening to Davin's Den, please listen to HudsonRiverRadio.com, featuring Mr. Helix on the Richter Observatory on Monday through Friday, 3 to 6.
You sound like you're not sure. Monday through Friday?
Is it Monday through Friday?
I've seen Al-Qaeda reads better.
Listen.
Hey, by the way.
That was a butter knife you got to
I
my neck.
I hate to interrupt this.
No, you don't.
Did you? You're right. I don't. Roger Stone. The FBI treated Al-Qaeda. I saw Al-Qaeda treated better than I was treated by the FBI. Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, it was a little bit of overkill.
You think?
One guy has a hole in his head at the bottom of the ocean. The other guy's fucking going on TV like he's fucking Nixon. I think there's a difference.
No, you had a SWAT team for assault vehicle.
That's how they do it. That's standard procedure.
They got to relax.
Really? That's standard procedure?
They got to relax. I mean, really, it was a little bit too much.
Why?
Because he's not a, he's not a freaking murderer.
No, but it was explained to me where he had made threats against people and animals and everything. So they got to take that seriously. You know, here's the funny thing about the FBI. You can say a lot about them. Sense of humor is not their strength.
No, it's not.
So they read these things. They take it literal.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
And they brought CNN to film it all.
You know, what are you going to do? Trump's not the only one who likes to be on TV. What can I tell you?
Listen, it's not
you should have said, well, Fox ain't coming.
Well, Fox would have loved that. Hannity would have said, no, Roger, stay inside.
You know, it's not a surprise to me that the guy with the top hat and the monocle was prone to hyperbole.
I'll tell you what, he is a dapper-looking fellow.
If that's what we want to call it.
Yeah, but it all goes away when you got a picture of Richard Nixon in the fucking middle of your back.
Unbelievable.
You fucking mo. Yeah.
So
really?
Bizarre.
Why not just put it lower, make it a tramp stamp, Roger? Let's commit.
Really?
Defend that, Joe. I dare you.
As you were saying that, I go, this would be perfect. This would have been a great, great debates of absurdity.
Yeah.
All right, how would we frame this? And it might be.
Well, do you feel it would be great to have a Nixon tattoo on your back, or would it be stupid?
All right, we can table that.
Because as they say, how do you feel? Defend that, John. I go, this is another segment.
Yeah, wait a minute.
All right, we'll have to talk about that. No, I'm not ruling it out. Are you going to get Trump on your back? No. Maybe on your muscle. Hey, look, Trump is talking.
It's going to be great. Strong muscle.
Look, it's Crooked Hillary.
Watch me talk when I do bicep. Bicep curls.
Trump's eating a hamburger. Yeah.
Get hungry.
All right, so I'm sorry, your read.
That's okay. I think I was done.
No, you were Monday through Friday.
Monday through Friday, 3 to 6, HudsonRiverRadio.com. Listen to the Richter Observatory. Great classic rock.
Richter Observatory.
Yep.
But it's a radio show, so you can't really observe.
I know. It's Theater of the
Mind. That's a cool name for a show.
Thank you. It is.
It's a cool name for a band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Richter Observatory. Yeah. Theater of the mind?
Yes, it is.
Okay. What are we doing? Fucking the kindergarten play?
Pretty much.
Okay. We're the finger painting of the soul.
Yeah, we're picking up whores and jizzing in socks.
Even better. Boy, he's it. He had to talk with himself.
He's on it now.
Quick. Yeah. I'm quick on stage. Why can't I be quick here?
Be ready.
I know, Joe. I'm sorry. I was 30 seconds on the late on the draw, so to speak. Joe, where are you going to be?
Nowhere. I think that license simple.
No. Coming to a Joe's girl near you.
Yes.
I said coming to.
Yes,
I heard that. Yeah, I heard that.
So I'm very respectful.
Joe's girl and I were just talking about how we miss succulent meat.
You want to give it a read for old time's sake?
No. We're done.
All right. Saturday, February 2nd, I'll be in Westport, Connecticut at the Treehouse Comedy Club at Bistro B at the Westport Inn. First time working for the Treehouse.
Nice place.
Oh, you been there?
Mm-hmm.
Good club?
Yeah.
Cool. So be there. In Connecticut. Haven't been up there in a little while. So, thank you guys for hanging out. Thank you, Joe and Pip, for braving the elements. Thank you, John Consoli.
Yes, thank you very much,
really
John.
Yeah, really good.
Very insightful.
ConsoliComedy.com. Definitely check out John. Very funny guy. He'll be doing one of my shows shortly. I'm going to try to figure out this sound issue. At least we weren't going off the air constantly tonight.
I know, but they get to hear. They were treated to sounds of Joe and I crunching on almonds and talking about crap.
Or as we call it, the first segment without the fucking almonds, you and I talking about crap.
Absolutely.
So, talked about hookers tonight, Joe, and how I'd probably be just awkward with one. But. You ever have a hooker?
No.
Think you'd be awkward with one?
Yeah. It's like, you know, I don't know.
You can't be indifferent about it, Joe.
Yeah, but it's just...
Yeah, you're here. All right, I guess suck a dick. You're here. You made the trip.
Yeah, right.
I mean, while you're down there.
I mean, somebody paid for this. So it'd be wrong not to.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to insult you by not having you suck my dick.
It's like, really, I'm fine with that.
You're an artist, and I need to respect you.
They'd just be sitting on the bed like, what the fuck? Maybe you should just club me and hide me in the bush.
She should.
Hide me in the bush. That's what he said. Oh, okay.
Bushes.
Yeah, so none of us good with hookers.
No.
Very unfortunate.
No.
All right, that's enough. If you like us, tell a friend. If you hate us,
tell no one.
Either way, please keep on listening. That be that.
No. Hey, out of curiosity, Casa Bianca, was that the fancy place where I was at, where you're having the peasy there?
Yeah, I got it. I'm booking them now.
Okay, so you got that. You got it back.
Contracts have that effect.
The reason I was kidding, what happened with that whole thing?
Well, what happened was, you know, they went with that fucking Goomba.
Uh-huh.
And then they brought in Peasy, which is fine, or whoever, which is fine. But then they brought in Floyd. And I never said anything the whole time. I'm like, all right, I just lost the count. But my contract says you can't bring in comics that I've brought to you on or off premises within 2 years of this contract without my permission. So I protect myself.
Right.
And they brought in Floyd, and I sent them a letter that we'd be going to court, and they're like, "What?" I'm like, "Well, it's the condo. What condo? We didn't mean to screw them." So I was like, "Now we're back."
Nice, all right, good. No, because like when I say I mentioned who's going to be here next month. Who's going to be here next month? Because I go see them.